It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Friends, you're in for a treat today as we welcome Jim and Starla Harding. Many of you may know them from articles in the American Rose Magazine in a series called The Rookie Rose Gardener. Now, these articles may have been targeted to those new to rose gardening, but they drew all of us into their rose adventures, sharing the good stuff and the bad. They've even been known to call their gardening style the Forrest Gump style of rose gardening. Now, I've seen pictures of their garden, and it doesn't look like Forrest Gump garden at all. It is beautiful. But what I want to know today is, how did this rose thing get started? Stay with us. The Rose Chat Podcast starts now. Hey, guys. Welcome to Rose Chat.
Thank you for having us.
We're so excited to have you here. Now, we know you're just knee-deep into the rose world, but you had to start somewhere. So how did this get started?
It was all Starla's fault.
That is true, actually. I mean, he finished up pretty good, but I would say it started with me. And, I mean, who doesn't love roses? I mean, the stories, I think, go way back, but our rose story together, I think, started in a, a little bag rose we planted under some river birches. And then, what was it, a trip to Hewitt's Nursery?
Yeah, here in Nashville.
Yeah, and it just happened to be when roses were in bloom. And, you know, I wanted one of everything, you know. So you see them and you're going wild. I'm ready to, you know, rent a U-Haul and take them all home. And, so Jim, put a little ultimatum down.
Yeah, I said, okay, all right, before we go broke, I said, how about six? Pick six, and we'll plant those. And so she picked six roses, and we planted them. And the whole goal was that, you know, first of all, she doesn't have a great track record of gardening and taking care of things. So I thought, you know, this is going to be a one and done, right? But she was out there every day loving on those roses. And I thought, daggone it, this might stick. And, she got so much enjoyment out of it. And I thought, wow, well, what can I do? You know, I love my wife. She loves her roses. How can I make it better? So, went online, did a search for roses, and up popped the Nashville Rose Society. So for Christmas, I decided I was going to give her a gift certificate to the Nashville Rose Society as a membership. And so she gets her Christmas gift, and she goes, what in the world is this?
I wasn't very kind. So, I mean, I don't know what other people's expectations are when they're first into roses, but I had a completely different vision of what a rose society is. I mean, it sounded, a little bit out of our league. You know, the Nashville Rose Society. And I thought, I'm not going. Yeah, exactly. So I said, I'm not going. You know, they probably don't even have dirty fingernails. I'm not going to this. I felt kind of bad. I mean, here it is Christmas, and I'm saying, I don't want my gift. So I think he went to the first meeting by himself, right?
Well, she was doing taxes, and the first meeting was, during tax season. So I said, well, if you're not going, I'm not going to waste our $25. I'm going. And sure enough, everybody there was just as down to earth and as friendly as all the rose people you meet are. And so I came back home and said, "You're wrong. We're going next time."
Well, what a great society you still have in Nashville. It is just some of my favorite people in the world are in the Nashville Rose Society. So, Starla, I'm glad you
came.
They
are so patient. I can tell you that. So patient. They never made us feel like beginners.
They had been there, I'm sure. Now, getting started with so many, I'm sure that you had lessons to learn. So what was that process like of learning how to grow great roses?
I think with everybody else, just trial and error. And in our case, you know, we did just about everything you're not supposed to do. But, you know, our Rose Society at the time had beginner workshops. You know, seasoned rose growers and rosarians would stand at, you know, like for the first half an hour of every meeting, would have a class for, you know, those of us who were beginners. And Jim and I spent a lot of time kind of, you know, ducking down in our seats because just about everything they'd say not to do, we, you know, do something we had just finished doing or, you know, something we had done a week or two before that.
And one of the things we learned that they talked about, they brought in the rose, you know, Ron Daniels, who you've had on Rose Chat several times, you know, awesome guy, awesome teacher, loves to share everything about roses. He had a rose bush in and he said, "Well, here's a sucker, and you don't want suckers. Go cut those off, okay?" And so we went home armed with that knowledge, right? And so, you know, we learned how to, you know, the rose season goes, and we winterize our roses, and next spring comes up, you see all these shoots coming out. And these shoots, it's like, "Ooh, that's a sucker. Cut it off. Chop, chop, chop." Ooh. And next thing you know, we learn, well, that was actually a basil break.
The coveted basil.
We went to his garden. He was going to, Lyle Worsham was teaching us to uncover our, you know, how to uncover our roses. Or dewinterize, because we have to do that here in Tennessee. And, and, you know, I think one of us pointed and said, "Oh, there's a sucker." And he said, no, that's not a sucker. That's a basil break. You want to keep those." And, I don't know if we told Lyle. We just kind of looked at each other like, "Oh, well, that would have been useful information."
Probably. Weeks
ago. I don't
ago.
Know, honey, how many basil breaks do you think we deemed suckers that year?
Oh, way too many.
Yeah.
And his advice was when you pull away the winterizing material, says, "Don't go in there like you're killing snakes." Yeah.
Because I think something else we had done, we were pretty aggressive and, you know, beating up that bud union and ripping those suckers off.
And what was crazy is the next spring, you know, springtime comes along, we see a lot of new growth coming up in and around the roses. Oh, wow, a bumper crop of basil breaks. This is awesome.
We were so careful not to pull them.
Right. And little did we know is that we had a black walnut tree back on the tree line, and the neighborhood squirrels planted the black walnuts around in and around the rose bushes. So what we thought was a bumper crop of basil breaks was actually a bunch of brand new baby black walnut trees.
You live and learn, brother.
Oh yeah, and those taproots on those little baby black walnuts, they go really deep.
Really fast. Really fast. So, you know, here we are waiting for them to start looking like rose bushes while they're taking root. And it was not a happy time. So now when we see one, because of course they still do it, and now when we see them, it's just like instant attack. Because we actually still have a few that just got out of control, so we just have to cut them. You know, or rent a backhoe to pull them out of there. So.
Now, when I first met you, you guys were award-winning editors of the Nashville Rose Leaf. So I'm sure there's a story there of how you got chosen for that job.
We got suckered.
not true.
Well, you know, the thing was that we both really enjoyed sharing something that we love, and you know, being out in the garden, getting your hands dirty, and just watching God's creation grow is just pretty amazing in and of itself. And so, you know, you kind of like, okay, what can I do to give back? You know, we enjoy being part of the Rose Society so much, and they were looking for somebody to take over being editors. And Starla, she's just, you know, she's a very talented, gifted storyteller, writer, and I thought this would be a great way for her to, you know, share her writing talents. And so, sure, we raise our hands. We don't know anything, but we'll be editors.
I would not at all say. I think Jim came to me later and said he had been approached and that, you know, he really wanted to do it. And again, it was sort of, you know, it was sort of like the gift certificate. I just thought, are you crazy? You know, it's bad enough that, you know, it's bad enough we don't know what we're doing. Now we're going to put in writing that we don't know what we're doing. But again, you know, the Rose Society was there for us. You know, they promised they would not allow us to put anything in the newsletter that was wrong. We had some great, you know, proofreaders and co-editors. So, you know, it wasn't, you know, we got a lot of the credit, but we had some amazing help and assistance, and we also had a terrific mentor who was the editor prior to us. Charles Lott preceded us. He was also the editor and the president of the Rose Society, and we never figured out how the man did both so well.
Mm-hmm. Having those people to mentor us in the Rose world is so beneficial.
It is. They, you know, and I think, you know, that's one of the reasons we just started, you know, kind of coming forward and trying to help other people and encourage other people to grow roses, because, you know, not for a minute did one person, you know, make us believe that we could not grow roses. And, you know, through all the trials and tribulations, we did have success. And it wouldn't, you know, but for those people believing in us, I think we would have given up long, long time ago.
Now, do you guys exhibit too? Are you just growers or are you exhibitors as well?
We were accidental exhibitors. We, you know, a couple times we entered, but, you know, I don't think we never won queen of a major show, but, we won a couple queens at our little, you know, our little, we called them Grand Prix, you know, I think just practice shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we won some trophies in some of the bigger shows. So yeah, we got into it for a little while, but again, you know, the newsletter, it was a big undertaking, and so our ability to really, you know, practice all the things that go with exhibiting, you know, just we weren't able to do that as much. And again, it was a kind of a difference in us. Jim loved the exhibiting, and I was pretty much, you know, irresponsible about it. I wasn't a good partner for him because I didn't take it seriously.
She became a really good leaf polisher. But the Grand Prix was, you know, it's like a little mini rose show, like she said, that you get to learn and practice. And so, you know, something fun, something different, another way to just, you know, have fun with roses. And so we had our bucket of roses when we went there the first time. And we thought, oh, this is the best rose. This is an awesome rose. And so one of the top exhibitors in the Natural Rose Society, he came over and he was kind of coaching people. He said, what do you got over there? And he started looking around in our bucket. And he said, what do you think? And I said, well, I think this one's a really good one. This is Don Gill. You know, a lot of...
Anyone who exhibits knows mm-hmm. the name Don.
Yeah. And so he goes, yeah, that one's okay. Well, how about this one? So I don't know about that one. He goes, well, let's kind of see what we can do with this.
I mean, we took it out of our trash bucket. We're like, oh, no, that's no good, Don. Suddenly we're telling Don what a good rose is.
Yeah, and next thing you know, he gets out his little brush, and he opens it up, and he does this and does that, and we're watching. And this whole rose that just bursts forth at his hand mm-hmm. that looks amazing. And he goes, well, what do you think of this? It's like, that looks pretty darn good, Don. So we enter it, and it wins.
It was queen. Yeah. Yeah.
And we were going to throw it away. So, you know, we didn't, what do we know?
Yeah, we have several good exhibitors.
Forrest Gump of the Rose Society. The Forrest Gump couple of the Rose Society.
Well, we have several exhibitors in our society, but I have watched people like Mark Nolan and John Heffner take what looked like a mediocre rose and it just absolutely sings. So I know what you mean about your friend. You know, they can just do work magic with these beautiful blooms.
It is a skill. It is a talent, and in my opinion, it's a gift. So, but again, I think you have to have that competitive, you know, and I'm not a big, you know, I'm not a very competitive person. Jim is incredibly competitive. So, I'd always find another wife who really didn't care, and, you know, we'd kind of goof off a little bit, and our husbands would yell at us and say, hurry,
We have some leaf polishing to do.
Uh-huh. Yes, I was allowed to leaf polish. I wasn't allowed to cut leaves anymore because I botched a couple of those. And what else did I do? Yeah, I put something on the wrong table. So, no, Strava's not the big exhibitor. It finally got to the point where when Jim started doing the arrangements, because his background is art, you know, is art. That's his a degree. And I have zero artistic ability. So when he began to arrange, I just said, well, don't even put my name on it. Everyone knows they have nothing to do with it.
Full disclosure. Yes, mm-hmm. Full disclosure in the rose world. I don't know about that. My husband is always saying that he wants full disclosure on how many we have. He thinks that I have very selective math skills when it comes to how many roses are in the garden. So
that's so interesting. I mean, that kind of the same thing happened here. His family was here, and you know, you gather them slowly, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think you have 50 or 100, and when you actually take a count, and I think I had taken a count, and his family was here, and I said, oh, we're beyond 200 roses. And he said, oh, Starla, you are always embellishing and, you know, da-da-da-da-da. We do not have 200 roses. You know, so we took a count, and I think it was closer to 250.
Yeah, I lost that bet.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it does creep up on you. It does creep
up.
Well,
Jim started changing the rules. He started saying, well, miniatures only count for half.
Hey, that's a good idea.
There goes that selection.
Yeah. You know, I think not all couples, you know, like in our society, not everyone is a married couple who grows. And it is an interesting dynamic. You know, it can bring you closer, but, you know, we've had a few powwows in the garden. We don't agree. You know, we have limited space here, very limited. We have a very, you know, we're smack dab in the middle of a subdivision with children and basketball hoops and, you know, we have a lot of obstacles to our rose growing. And we're both always vying for a completely, I like the hybrid teas, he likes the David Austin, so we're constantly fighting over which rose we're going to buy and put where.
Now, I saw a picture in one of your articles, and your garden was just filled with children. So is that one of the ways that you share your love of gardening? Is it with the neighborhood children?
She is the Pod Piper of the neighborhood, and it's just, it's amazing to watch. I don't know what it is, but the kids in the neighborhood just flock to her, and they just had the best time out there, you know, sniffing roses, and she'll go, well, y'all get to pick a rose, and they get so excited. You know, just have a rose. And they'll fret and fuss over which rose they get. And, you know, they'll smell the roses. And there was one rose. It was a David Austin. It was orange. What was it called? Anyway, the little girl said it smelled like makeup. You know? And, you know, it's just to see them get so excited over, you know, God's beautiful creation of rose. And, you know, you don't know if they will take that memory and one day have their own roses or rose garden, but it's just great to watch her out in the garden with the kids.
I think my favorite thing is to watch them. I mean, I certainly would not take credit for the children being drawn here. I think it's the roses that draw them, not me. Mm-hmm. But I love to see their excitement when you give them a rose to take to mom. it's just the sweetest thing. The way they just run off with their rose, you know. I don't get to see the reaction of mom. And sometimes the teacher, sometimes they want one for a teacher, and we do the same thing. But yeah, children give a whole new dynamic to growing roses. So, and that's why we actually have, we have one rose bed that's just so close to the sidewalk, it's not funny. And, you know, it takes a lot of, wear and tear because there's a basketball goal right beside it. And I sit around wishing these boys would get better aim, but, but still, it's really nice to watch. I mean, people of all ages, older people and, you know, children alike, just kind of walk around and smell the roses. And, that one we intentionally put fragrant roses in.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the stories that you've heard about your garden, what it's meant to people?
I think one thing that I loved, and I think we actually put it in one of our ARS articles. It was just last year a woman, stopped and just yelled out at us. We were in other parts of the garden, and she yelled out, "Your roses are beautiful." And we said, "Oh, you know, thanks. Would you like us to cut one for you?" Because if somebody's standing out there, we'll just cut one for them and, share them. And she said, "You know, my mother is from Texas, and she grew roses for years and years and years. And we were here, she was here about a month ago, and we were walking around, and she noticed all of your roses. And she said, you know, I don't know those people, but I bet if you knock on their door that they would be so happy to walk you around their garden, to cut roses for you. I bet there would be some of the friendliest, nicest people that you've met." And it just warmed my heart because I thought, I don't know the woman. I've never met her, but she understands the camaraderie of rose, that rose growing can promote. And I told her, "Your mom's right. You know, she's right. You could knock on our door and, you know, we'd be happy to give you roses or walk you around the garden. And, you know, the next time your mom's here, drop by with her. We'd love to meet her and talk to her about her roses." So.
You can tell them about the mail lady.
Well, you tell them. That was kind of your doing.
Yeah, you tell it better.
Oh, it was just, we had somehow, and I still don't remember how it started, but we had a neighborhood feud going on with our mail lady.
Starla did not like our mail lady. Well, that's
Well, it wasn't just me. I mean, I admit I can be a petty person who holds grudges. Jim's a nice one, and I'm the one who can be, you know, have that dark side of me. But somehow we've gotten in a feud with her, and it was a neighborhood thing. None of us, we were all just giving her the stink eye and, you know, just turning our backs on her. And she didn't like us. We didn't like her. And, I think we enjoyed just kind of ganging up on her behind her back. And I didn't, you know, Jim had no clue that we were, you know, had a private little war going on with her. And so we were out in the garden working one day, and she was on her, you know, I could see she was headed towards our mailbox, and I very snidely, I don't know why Jim didn't realize I was being sarcastic, I said, you know, "I dare you to give her a rose." And I walked away, and as I turned around, Jim had clipped a rose, and he was headed to the mail truck with it. And I was sure she was going to bite his head off, and, you know, I thought, "Oh, what have I done?" So I went running after him and said, no, and it was too late. But by the time I got there, she was a different person, completely different person. She was like a teenager, just sniffing the rose and grinning and blushing and just as, you know, thrilled as she could be. And, and I learned something that day for sure, just the power of a rose. And after that, you know, she and I actually, I can't say we became friends, but became very, you know, friendly with each other. And every time I would see her, I would give her a rose. So it's interesting how just the offering of a rose can change a person's outlook. It changed hers and mine.
Mm-hmm. So true. There's actually a quote in your article that I'm going to read. It's just so good. It just really tells the story well. The quote from you is, "People expect to receive roses on Valentine's Day or other sentimental holidays. But when you hand a rose to someone you don't even know, it's as if all barriers are removed and a universal language is spoken through a simple smile of appreciation." That is so well said. I've seen that happen time and time again.
Yeah, and it warms. I mean, I imagine you're the same way, right? I mean, you know you're giving them pleasure, but don't you get pleasure in your heart when they smile at you?
I sure do.
You know, I mean, it's not like I made that rose, but but it just feels wonderful to hand it to someone and see the appreciation in their face.
Yeah, well,
no one ever hands them back.
Yeah.
I have never ever had someone refuse a rose, and that's very, you know, that's saying a lot too, because you know there are curmudgeons in this world. In fact, I'm often one of them when it comes to roses.
Yeah, some of them even drive mail trucks.
That's right.
You know, a few years ago they dedicated the Nashville Music Garden, which is a bunch of roses full of named after celebrities and Nashville artists and songs and whatever. And so, you know, it's a pretty, you know, big to do over it, and they had a bunch of roses to hand out to anybody who wanted to show up. And so the Rose Society asked for folks to volunteer to come hand out roses, and you know, I worked downtown in Nashville, so I walked down there, Starla came and met me, and it was a big crowd, and so we would gather up roses and go hand them out to people. Well, I got to this group of older ladies, and I ran out of roses, and they said, "Well, we want a rose, we want a rose." I said, "Well, I'll be right back," and I went to go get roses. I lost track of them. I did not know where they are, couldn't find them in the crowd. They found me. They were hunting me down. They wanted their rose. And they just thought that was the best thing, you know, getting a free rose. And then Starla, you know, little Miss Snarky over here, she sees these guys sitting over on a bench. And she tries to give them a rose. They go, "Oh, no thanks, no thanks. Oh, are you too manly to take a rose?" You know, and she starts, you know, questioning their manhood about not receiving the roses. "But what about your wife? You know, she would like to have her." "Oh, yeah, I'll take, give me more roses."
Yeah, they are. But, I mean, the funny thing is they're very, you know, both of them, very burly men, you know. And I think one of them was wearing construction boots and, I mean, just very burly, tough men. Who probably, you know, felt embarrassed that I felt embarrassed to give them a rose, but, you know, they were there. And it's funny how the first thing, when I handed it to them, first thing they did was sniff it, you know.
Wow. And the bigger they are, the harder they fall. They might have brought a rose after that, Starla. That might have led to a bush.
So, guys,
never know.
I wanted to ask you about, you know, you were editors of the Nashville Rose Leaf for several years, and then you sort of launched out into the national spotlight by writing the beginner's column for American Rose magazine. Can you tell us a little bit about how all that came about?
Well, I'm glad we get the opportunity to do that, because it was actually, you know, it's not really that we had graduated. We were the editors of the newsletter when we were asked to write the beginner's columns for the ARS. And then all of a sudden, you know, our schedules just be, you know, Jim started having a ton of travel. So we wound up having to, and, you know, we tried, I think, for 2 or 3 years to find another editor, and we're unable to do that. So, you know, so currently our newsletter does not have an editor, and it does not have a formal newsletter anymore. So, you know, shout out to anyone who may be interested, because I'm sure our Rose Society would very much like to have their rose leaf back. So we felt bad that it probably seemed that we dumped our newsletter for the purpose of doing these articles, but that was just not how it happened. That was not the case, but. We were just, you know, that was a, you know, we had taken on the commitment and you know, wanted to fulfill that as well.
had kind of forgotten about it. Jolene Adams called and asked if we would write the beginner's articles, and she said, oh, it's 3 years away. And it's like, that seemed forever. It's
yeah,
like,
we thought, oh, yeah, sure. And that 3 years just stuck right up on us. And it was a completely different experience, I'll say. You know, doing the newsletter, most of the time, you know, and I will say, Jim did almost all of the work. I wrote the editor's columns a lot of times and would do some proofreading, but Jim was the heavy, and I always told everybody, you know, he was the person who put the most effort into it. So by the time the ARS articles came along, I don't know why I equated it with, oh, it'll be like writing an editor's column, and it was nothing like it. You go from, you know, four paragraphs to three pages or four pages, and it was very daunting. I'm glad it was the beginner's column, because if it had been anything else, I think Jim and I would have thought we were way over our heads. Because, I mean, obviously we're not horticulturists or scientists or anything like that. We're just two people who love gardening and love roses.
Right. Well, and you know, I think that's what people are looking for. They're looking for that realness that comes from folks who actually get out and dig in the dirt.
Well, I think that's what makes y'all show so great, you know, the work that you guys do for the Rose World, in that you have all walks of life of people from the Rose World. I can't remember the guy's name from the Biltmore Rose Garden, but, you know, just love listening to y'all interview him. He's so full of just great ideas and tips on growing roses. And so where else can you get that information other than Rose Chat Radio?
Well, I'll tell you, it's been a lot of fun. I think you all started writing American Rose about the time that Rose Chat was really ramping up. So we've kind of all been on this journey together.
It's just funny what people will do for roses, right? and they're rewarding. I mean, I think I wrote about it one time before. They're not discriminatory, really. You know, they don't know whether it's a very wealthy, prestigious scientist, you know, growing them, or if it's just dumb old Jim and Starla Harding growing them, you know. They'll grow beautiful for us, and then sometimes, you know, we're covered up with black spots. So,
well, guys, thank you all so much for just taking a few minutes out of what I know is a very busy schedule for you, and just to come on the show and share your experiences in the garden and on writing these award-winning articles for the Nashville Rose Leaf as well as for American Rose. We really appreciate what you all do.
Well, anything we can do to promote the love of roses and you know, help educate people and encourage anyone out there, you know, who thinks they can't grow roses, that, oh, yes, you know, two lunkheads here in Tennessee can do it, anybody can do it.
And there's a friend of ours that a lot of people may know as a hybridizer, Whit Wells. And, you know, we would drive from Nashville to Memphis, and on the way we'd stop by his place in Brighton, Tennessee, just north of Memphis, and hang out with him. And, you know, he's a talker. He's a storyteller guy. And it's just so much fun seeing, you know, his greenhouse and walking through. And he's talking about roses, and, you know, we ask him, well, what's your success? He goes, well, you know, God does 90%. I do 10%, and most of the time I don't keep up my share.
Oh, I believe that to be true.
I think that's true for all of us to some some extent or another. Certainly for us, we luckily grow them. So.
Yeah, they grow despite us.
But we're happy to, you know, we're just happy to know there are people out there like you too, you know, that share in the love of this hobby.
And one of my favorite stories is one of yours, Chris, is when you had the house in Nashville, and you didn't know how you had a rose in the front yard.
Oh, yeah, yeah. well, I wish I could say sweet Miss Dodd that lives across the street, but it wasn't the case. But, she encouraged me to grow roses. I'll be real diplomatic and say that.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.